This Do Lectures episode features co-founder of DIY and Vimeo, Zach Klein, recorded live at the global event in Cardigan, West Wales in 2013.
I actually thought that the ideas that I'd present today would be surprising, but after being here for 3 days, I've come to realize that so much of my philosophies resonate with everyone, and I'm afraid that what I might tell you is just an affirmation of what you already know. Specifically, I want to talk about exit strategy. In the current cult of startup, it's a perfectly reasonable idea of success to start a company just to sell it very soon after for gobs of money. Tech websites are just filled with salacious headlines talking about this new startup, Derby Derp, that just sold to Google for God knows how much. And if you have started a company or are running one, there's no doubt that at times you've caught yourself daydreaming about that moment you might cash in all your chips for all the hard work that you put into your company. And if you haven't thought about it, inevitably your investors are, because they have investors too, and they need to be paid back. My thought process was very much the same when I got started. When I was 17, I was one summer away from starting college that I couldn't afford, and everyone was frothing at the mouth about starting up companies. And I really thought that I could spend one summer, I could make something groundbreaking, and it would be my golden ticket to pay for school and solve all of my problems. I spent, seriously, the whole summer locked away in my room, coming up with the biggest idea that I could come up with, and that was the Reptile Shack. Turns out, not a very big business. And the customers I did have were very weird. My interactions would go something like this. Do you have geckos? And I'd be like, yes, I have geckos. And they said, okay, great. And I'd say, how many do you want? Six geckos, I need male, female pairs. I'm like, that's fine. And I'd send them off to the lady. And then 3 months later, she said, she wrote me back an email and she said, do you have anything that eats geckos? Because I have a gecko problem. So I just let this business fizzle and I finished school. Towards the end of school, I joined another startup with some mates I met at school, and we had a hard time getting started. I think most often because no one took us seriously, because we looked more like a boy band than anything else. But we lived the startup dream. As soon as we graduated, we moved to California. We worked without shirts, of course, and we really had no idea what we were doing, but we were just so caught up in the moment. We felt we were taking part in this historic era, similar to when the railroads were being laid, where there was this massive infrastructure and anything was possible, and it was up to everyone to chip in to do it. So we had this awesome idea to make a video sharing website, and we poured our hearts into it, and where we lacked wisdom, we made up for it with very long hours. And after just a few short years of graduating school, our team had grown. We hadn't even raised any money. We were at 70 people, I think, when this photo was taken. And it was beautiful. We were so enthusiastic, we were optimistic. It was the kind of company where people would just stop everything to break out a video camera and take an obnoxious viral video and post it to the web. Piece of trivia, there's one fellow in here, Zach Smith, who actually went on to co-found MakerBot, and he spoke last year at Do Lectures. So, so only after 2 short years, this came to a swift and sudden end. The very first billionaire to come along and offer us money to purchase it was a no-brainer for us. It was exactly what we had built the company to do. This is what it was all for. This is what it was supposed to be about. And at the age of 23, my partners and I sold our company. There's a great, there's a quote, it's it's given credit to several different people, so I really can't say who said it. But the quote is, being an entrepreneur is like jumping off a cliff and having to build your wings on the way down. And a lot of people say that the exit strategy is the moment that you land. But I have to tell you that as soon as I sold my company and I was standing safely on the ground, I wanted nothing more than to have those wings again. I just wanted to keep flying. So desperate to climb a new cliff and to get flight back, I started gearing myself up to start another company. And so taking it very slowly, I spent time just meeting anyone I could who was smart. I became a luncher, as they called me in New York. And this is a guy named Scott Heiferman. He's the founder of a company called Meetup. And he gave me the most tremendous advice I think I'd ever received, which was, well, it was more of a personal revelation on his part. He told me that that year he had realized that he wasn't the founder and CEO of Meetup.com. He was the founder and CEO of Meetup, that he had realized that he was in it to spend a lifetime creating experiences and tools to allow people to come together around common interests. And that Meetup.com was just the first permutation of many permutations of ideas and tools that he would develop. And he began to help me realize that I shared a similar hunger to really commit myself to one thing, or at least to create a company that had no horizon. There's obviously lots of precedent for this. There's great entrepreneurs throughout history who had devoted their entire lives to doing something innovative, something that they were uniquely passionate and skilled to do. The likes of Henry Ford, Steve Jobs, Elon Musk, who's the most contemporary example. But there's one person who is quite anonymous, I think, in the community of entrepreneurs still, despite the fact that that his company has been mentioned several times at Do Lectures. This is Yvon Chouinard. And I stumble upon him. He is the founder of Patagonia. But before he founded Patagonia, he actually created a company called the Chouinard Equipment Company. He was the pioneer of modern rock climbing and invented the sport of ice climbing. He and his friends, who he referred to as dirt bags, they lived in and out of vans, cruising up and down California, and in their spare time, they would forge equipment to modernize rock climbing. And unfortunately, after someone using his equipment incorrectly fell to their death, he had to sell that company away because he couldn't afford the liability insurance. And the only product he had left that he was able to sell was a rugby shirt that he had picked up while visiting the UK that inspired him and he thought was an impeccable climbing implement, and he mass-produced it and founded the Patagonia company as a result. He said he was never really passionate about the company. It was just something easy, and it was a good handoff from the thing he loved most. It kept him close to climbing. In the 80s, after it had reached annual sales of $200 or $300 million, he began to seriously contemplate selling it. And before doing so, he sought the advice of a sort of guru. And the guru asked him, "What are you most passionate about?" And Yvon responded, "I'm most passionate about preserving Patagonia. It's a beautiful frontier where I've gone for lots of inspiration, where I've become a more advanced climber. And I would like to sell my company and use a large percentage of that to buy land to preserve." And the guru just said, "You have it all backwards. You have a company that stands for something. You have a company that employs people. And you are actively engendering those people to feel the same way that you do about Patagonia. It would not be as effective to sell the company and to donate that to Patagonia, the land now, as much as it would to continue growing that company, to make it even healthier, to hire more employees that feel as passionate about Patagonia as you do." And that's what he did. He decided not to sell the company, and he wrote into the company charter that 1% of all profits would be donated to Patagonia annually, which he has done every year since the 1980s. In the back of his memoir was this picture. It's a little hard to see in the contrasted projector. But I found myself coming back and back to this photo. This is him and his early coworkers at their forge in California. And there was this something remarkable about it to me. It looked to me as though all these people really loved each other and that their work was indistinguishable from play, that they truly loved what they were doing. A few years ago, some friends and I started playing up in some woods about 90 minutes northwest of the city. We were all just sort of tired of working online, and we had a sudden and urgent desperation to start making things with our hands, although none of us really had the skills to do that. Nevertheless, that didn't stop us. We just started building cabins obsessively. They were awful at first, they were leaky, but we got better and better, and it was the most profound experience I'd had in a very long time. I realized that I felt the most creative I'd felt in years because I felt like a beginner again. I allowed myself to become vulnerable, and I was amongst people in which there was no hierarchy, in which all of us were just so grateful to be making something together. And it kept bringing me back to this image. And then just about 1 year ago, before I started the company that I'm now working on called DIY, I came across this picture of children digging in some sod for worms. And again, I look back between these images. And I just sort of realized that we're born to know how to work with each other, how to collaborate, and how to be creative. And I think we need to look backwards in ourselves, because I think it comes naturally, and over the years it gets beaten out of us, that what we should be doing is pursuing companies that allow us to play, that allow us to be beginners, that allow us to be learners. Naturally, we are mesmerized by the world. Naturally, we learn effortlessly through observation of our friends. Naturally, we're scientists and explorers. And we are quick to prototype and make with whatever we have without any excuse. So that's really what drives me now. And so I'd like to humbly offer some more advice, or at least some lessons that I've learned from this process that's informed the company that I'm working on now. And that is just simply that we should make work feel like play, because I think that play is a human superpower that we don't talk about enough. I think it is when it's the moment in which we are at the paramount of our focus and interest in whatever we're doing. And it is never tiring. So to create a company that feels like play, first, it starts with you. You need to lead with a beginner's mind. You need to create the conditions in which no one is vulnerable or feels vulnerable to be a learner. And when I was drafting this slide or looking over it today, I thought about Do Lectures himself. I thought, what incredible leaders David and Claire and the other founders of Do are. They epitomize this slide. They've led us by simply creating a framework in which all of us feel comfortable coming here and passionately sharing our ideas. The second thing I've learned is that if you're looking for co-founders, you've probably already met them. In your lifetime, our lifetimes, we make thousands of decisions that lead us to this particular time and place. And it's not random that the people sitting around you are there. They've also made similar decisions. And with these people, it's more likely that we can trust and resonate with. If you are not in your everyday life around people that you resonate with, then I bet that there are some decisions hanging over you that you haven't made or you've avoided making because you're afraid. If there's some place you need to go, if there's something that you need to do, you should do it. Because going to those places and making those decisions will likely lead you to the people that will make you feel most creative and most comfortable. With investors, choose wisely. For most of us, we're lucky if we get any investment at all. But I wouldn't be hasty in just accepting any money. find investors who understand that the bottom line isn't your only priority. Your bottom line could be to be a company that never goes away, or maybe a company that fulfills its fantasy in 20 years. Or maybe it's to contribute to culture, to create great jobs, but make sure that that's baked into your business plan and that your investors buy into it. Third is that not all jobs are created equal. Most jobs are crap, and that's because most companies are founded for one reason, and that's to be profitable, to be valuable. And because of that reason, we often ask way too much of our employees, and we don't give them much back. And I think that one of the greatest joys of being an entrepreneur is creating a company that can offer people jobs that are meaningful and will lead to interesting lives. And finally, treat the people that use the thing that you make as a community. If you're doing it right, you're making something that you love for yourself, and the people who are also using that product, they're not customers, they're not users, they're people just like you, they're your neighbors. So in closing, I beg you to do something valuable as your investors want, but also to solve worthy challenges, contribute to culture, help make your employees' lives interesting, stand up for what's important, and behave as if your company is going to be here 100 years from now. Build the company you wouldn't sell.
The Do Lectures is here to share stories of remarkable people in the hope they will inspire you to go and do amazing things too. There are over 300 talks to listen to, or if you prefer, watch on our website, thedolectures.com. Hit the subscribe button on your favourite podcast platform to get the latest episodes when they come out.